World's on fire. Our culture is disintegrating.
Hey, pass the salt.
It's time. It's time.
Hey, you, pass the salt.
You know why it's disintegrating? Because we're jellyfish.
Pass the salt, will you?
Pass the salt.
Pass the salt, amigo.
It's time. It's time.
I think they could give us a new name. I believe we are Evan Jellyfish.
Hey, will you pass the salt?
Pass the salt.
We need salt over here.
It's time for Pass the Salt.
Pass the salt.
But we like to share the gospel without any backbone to it, see?
The views, opinions, and seemingly outrageous comments expressed in this program are based on the Holy Spirit.
We need salt over here.
It's time for Pass the Salt.
Out there, Christian America.
It's time for Pass the Salt with a coach, Dave Dobenmeyer.
Well, I've come out of my underground bunker today. In fact, I'm in a different underground bunker today. Coach Dave coming to you live from somewhere out in planet Earth. And I had a little bit of feedback there at the beginning. Jared's went on the board there doing a great job for us. So if you heard that feedback and hurt your ears, apologize to you today. Man, it's cold. I don't know where you are, but I'm in Coldville. And I got on my phone. You know how you do that in the morning? You check them. Temperatures in different places. Everywhere I look today, it's cold. It's Coldville. Must be that global warming. I think a good show lined up for us today. You know, I've been hearing from a lot of people regarding what we've been doing the last few days in regards to family and fatherhood. And I was just talking to my good friend Rich there before we went on the air that ultimately, listen, guys and girls, if we lose our families, what good's your life? What good is your life if you lose your kids? And a lot of us are struggling with it. A lot of us, I'm 64 years old. My children certainly are far from perfect. But I run into a lot of people that their whole. I heard from a lady yesterday. I would share the email, but I didn't ask her if I could do that. And she just talked about all four of her children, they raised them in a Christian home. They homeschooled them. They did everything they could. And none of the four are serving the Lord. Don't even want to talk about the God. Deny the Lord. What a wound in the heart to have to carry that around. Jesus told us it's in John 8. I don't know if I'm going to get there. You shall know the truth, and the truth, if you know it, shall make you free. But see, that's not what that says. Go ahead, Jared. Put that up there right now. John 8. John 8. This is so important. Again, I want to do a show. Let me get it up here. I want to do a show on things the Bible says that aren't true. John 8, right? The things the Bible say that aren't true or are partial truths. Just those two things alone. Go down to about verse 31, Jared. I could read the whole thing, but I want you guys to see this and let this get into you. How many have heard the phrase, you shall know the truth and the truth shall make you free? Y'all have heard that, right? We hear pastors talk about that all the time. Or you hear pastors say, the truth will make you free. Or maybe not pastors, but you hear people say, well, the truth will make you free. And it sounds good, but that's not what it says. That's just not what it says. It's like going into a football meeting and drawing up a play and saying to the lineman, if you step with the correct foot, you'll block him. There's a basis of truth in it, but that is not true. You can't block a guy just by stepping with the right foot. Now, stepping with the proper foot will ensure the likelihood of you blocking him goes up. But if I just teach him how to step, that's not it, right? So I can teach you the truth. You can hear the truth. You can be presented with the truth. But that doesn't make you free. Say, what, coach? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Take this to your pastor on Sunday and show it to him. I'm on Luke 8:31. Then Jesus said to the Jews, which believed on him, well, I could preach right there. If you continue in my word, then you are my disciples indeed. Not a period, colon. And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. See, the truth doesn't make you free. I'm going to read it again. Then Jesus said to the Jews which believed, if you continue in my word, then you are my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. See, only his disciples to know the truth. And only once you know the truth, by getting into the bread of life and eating the bread of life daily, are you really going to be free. The truth then sets you free. You understand that, Rich? I know you understand it. Sarge, you get that, right? Somebody can give you a truism. But the deeper you walk in that truism, the more you get in the Bible and you square things up with it, it begins to make sense to you. So I was today, you can pull that down, Jared. Thanks. So don't ever say that anymore, that the truth shall make you free. That's not what it says. Although I suppose that's a truism. The truth does make you free, but not if you don't know it. And not if you don't abide in his word. The truth isn't going to make you free. So we're having a little bit of a discussion here before we got up on the air. I'm sorry if I keep putting my glasses on. Guys are giving me comments, and I like to see what they say. People don't want to be in the Word, since it's much easier to not believe in the Creator but follow the world. Hey, not only that. I think the first thing we ought to do in our churches is when pastors get preaching, somebody bust the overhead projector. And make them learn to use their Bible. See, pastors love that. They play biblical sleight of hand. They say, well, here's John 8:31. They read from John 8:31. Now let's go to Matthew 16:12. And then we get down. Let's finish up here with 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 83. And they flash them up on the screen. And first of all, you never learn how to navigate your way through the Bible. Just words up on a screen. It's no different putting Shakespeare up there. Sorry, it's no different. As opposed to teaching people in the church, this would be unique, in the church how to navigate their way through the Bible. Matthew in relation to Mark. Where's 2 Thessalonians in relationship to John? Most people don't even know that, because you go in there, it's like going to McDonald's. It's all fed for you right up there on the screen. Eat. Nope. I call it spiritual welfare. It's all provided there for you. So if you are abide in his word, truth, and the truth shall make you free. So we were discussing today, I'm going to do a little program today on a couple issues I want to try to cover today. I think they're really, really critical for the time in which we live. I like to do a show that is not only biblically relevant, but culturally relevant, and what has happened in the culture presently relevant. I think if we begin to get more of that kind of stuff, our faith is going to mean so much more to us. Pick up the Bible, we can look out in the world, and we can compare the two and see what's going on and see what it is that we're supposed to do about it. My back's a little stiff. I'm sitting on a little first grader's chair here. So, I mean, I know I look big, but that's not it. So this whole thing that's going on with fake news, I think, is critical for us to zero in a bit. I don't know how many of you were aware, or most of you are probably, of the event that took place in Chicago 2 days ago, 3 days ago, whenever it was. The live Facebook broadcast of four black youths, they're calling them, four black thugs going to a McDonald's and basically kidnapping this special needs kid. Now, hang on. I hate that word. Special needs. I got special needs. Rich, he's got special needs. I promise you. Larry's got special needs. The heck does that even mean, has special needs? So anyway, they have kidnapped. They went in. They knew this young guy, this white guy. Four black kids kidnapped this white guy, white kid with mental deficiencies. And they knew him. And he went with them because he knew him. And then they got him in there and they videoed apparently over 2 days of torture that they put on him. They made him say F Donald Trump and F white people and made him drink out of a toilet and all kinds of unbelievable stuff. And the media is doing everything they can do not to cover it. Hey, Rich, if it had been four white guys doing this to a mentally defective black guy, every city in America would be burning. Somebody give me a thumbs up. Say, you, no, ain't no kidding. Every city in America would be burning. And they had, here in Chicago, the police chief, because of political correctness, the police chief, they wouldn't even identify it as a hate crime. Hate crimes. I hate that word. Are there love crimes? You know, I think a lot of people kill their wives, murder suicides. Those are love crimes. They're not hate crimes. Shouldn't a love crime be against the law? Is my murder any less serious because it was a love crime rather than a hate crime? See, it's another one of those stinking made up words. Word of hate crime was done specifically to keep white guys from speaking the truth in regards to minorities. That's all it is. You say, well, coach, no, it wasn't. It was about preventing bullying. Really? Preventing bullying, huh? Like getting knocked off of Facebook because they don't agree what you said, be getting put in Facebook jail. You tell me that's not bullying? Like being forced to bake a cake for some homosexuals? You have to? That's not bullying? Huh? Like telling you that if you don't pay your income taxes, they're going to come seize your property? That's not bullying? Wake up here, will you? Wake up. See, it's not bullying. It is a political correct technique to deceive you. So they weren't even going to. Hey, I heard the other day, this alleged case took place in Chicago. It was alleged. They had a freaking live broadcast of it. What do you mean it's alleged? It was alleged. When was the last time the tables were turned and you heard that it was a white man who did an alleged crime? We're talking about race. I think it's important to talk about race. I think it's important because this is part of this politically, this is part of this lie that we're believing. And we're talking about family and family environment and training up children. I am becoming more and more convinced that I am going to say more and more politically incorrect things. Somebody give me a thumbs up. Say, I'm with you, coach. With you. I am going to bust down that paradigm. That's what I want to do. That's what we have to do. Because political correctness is nothing more than lying. That's all it is. Somebody say to you, coach, you can't talk like that. Hey, Rich, why can't I? Hey, Larry, why can't I talk like that? Where's the rule that says I can't talk like that? Other than somebody has told me it's socially unacceptable to do it. You know, when I started teaching school, I'm going to get into political correctness. I got a George Carlin clip. I got some good stuff to share with you this morning. I wrote a commentary about 5 years ago called Change the Word. Words change the world. Change the words, change the world. If you change the words, you change the world. So in other words, a sodomite becomes gay. Right? Sodomite marriage becomes gay marriage. The guy that I'm physically abusing sexually becomes my partner. And unfortunately, we are forced in the church to swallow and use that same stinking language. I'm tired of it. I'm done with it. Tired of it. Hey, listen, brothers. I'm going down standing up. I had a guy tell me one time, say, coach, if you get yourself in a lot of trouble, they're going to run you out of town. I said, you daggone right. And when they do, I'm going to be leading the parade. I'll be daggone if I'm going to be in the back of it and they're going to be dragging me. I'm going to be out front. They're going to be chasing me when they run me out of town. That's the way that I want to do it. And I'm going to be doing it in a righteous manner. I'm going to be persecuted for righteousness' sake. And if we will come to the realization that political correctness is, in fact, lying. And we're teaching to our children, we might take things a little bit more seriously. So City of Chicago yesterday, after some badgering, finally said, okay, it's a hate crime. It's a hate crime. Because remember, hate crimes were put in place to keep white people from doing mean things to minorities. That's the whole purpose of a war. And we know that in America today, they say that I can play a clip after clip after clip. I'm not making this stuff up. That people would say that it's impossible for a black person to be racist. It's impossible. So that's where we are. Because you can't laugh at somebody, you can't tell the truth about somebody, they change the words, they change the names. When I started teaching school, I was a special education teacher, We called them slow learners. Oh, no, no, no. No, 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 no. They're not slow learners. Can't be saying that. Well, what are they? Oh, they're differently abled. Huh? Yeah, they're differently abled. They're special needs. No, no. He's differently abled. I'm differently. We're all differently abled. He's a slow learner. And see, we got to the point where we would not speak the truth for fear of hurting somebody's feelings. Why? Why? I'm not talking about being harsh and mean and rude to somebody and not being concerned about their feelings, but it's been a very, very, very slow process. And as a result of it, they've turned our entire world upside down. Change the world. Change the words, change the world. Let me set you off with just a little light one here this morning, okay? Hey, Jared, play this 2-minute video, ISIS Housewives. Have you guys seen this? Some of you probably have seen it. Maybe some of you haven't seen it. This is that you want to talk about being politically incorrect. Now, understand this something. For something to be politically incorrect, it must involve the truth. All humor requires truth. There has to be an element of truth in order for something to be funny. You watch the clips of Donald Trump when they do a parody of him on Saturday Night Live. It's funny because it looks like him, and it sounds like him, and has his mannerisms. All comedy has to have truth in it, or it's not funny, right? So I can't believe that they're even letting this. See, they want to censor these kind of things off of Facebook, right? They want to censor them. Facebook censors, government censors, fake news. It's all about the control of information and the control of thought. And I'm going to tell you, if your thoughts are not free, and if your words are not free, if your speech is not free, you're not free. You're not free. Now, I know this. Free speech has consequences. I say the wrong thing about Sarge's wife, I might get popped in the mouth. I still got the right to say it. But I don't have the right to be free from the consequences of having said it. Here is the Housewives of ISIS. BBC made this, I think.
Coming up this season on The Real Housewives of ISIS.
It's only 3 days till the beheading, and I've got no idea what I'm going to wear.
Abdul seduced me online. He had me at free healthcare. So this is my sixth marriage. I've been widowed 5 times. 6 times.
I'm so glad I've moved over here. It's everything those guys on the chat rooms told me it would be. And it's full of so many wonderful surprises.
Didn't have to do this in Birmingham. Bullshit.
Are you ready, girls?
Yeah. Hang on, I'm recording it for Instagram.
Ta-da! What do you think? Ahmed surprised me with it yesterday.
Hashtag OMG, hashtag Jihadi Jane, hashtag Death to the West ISIS emojis.
Oh, babes, I love it. You look gorgeous.
She looked massive. You're gonna need a lot of Semtex to kill that one.
Oh, guys. What do you think of this?
Awkward. What a complete beach. She knew I had that jacket. Copies everything. Copy this.
Oh my God, it was so cringe. Hashtag matchy matchy.
It's times like this I wish I'd never moved out here.
Coming up next week.
He won't stop talking about his 40 virgins. Why can't he be happy with me?
Ali bought me a new chain, which is 8 foot long. So I can almost get outside, which is great.
So there it is, the Housewives of ISIS. Politically incorrect, funny. We're not even allowed to laugh or make fun of anything anymore. So, but here's the problem. Here's why I even want to bring this up this morning. We are under, I was listening to speaking actually with Doug Hagman a couple days ago. And I don't know if you guys know this, but their website has been absolutely unbelievably under attack. Drudge Reports getting knocked down, being taken offline, being hacked. And the meme that they're playing behind is fake news. And why are they so concerned about fake news? Well, I want to double back on something we spoke about the other day, or actually it's been a few weeks ago. Pizzagate's real. Pizzagate is real. And this whole idea of the fake news and the Russians and all this stuff is being sprung up now because they understand. Look, their clothes have been, the curtain's been pulled back. They've been exposed. The emperor has no clothes. We are seeing right now, in your lifetime, in my lifetime, right now today, the death of the mainstream media. Right now, we're watching it. We saw during this life, they were exposed. We know now know that they are all leftists. We now know that they are all working for that same organization, both all of them. We now know it. And so the only way that they're going to be able to remain relevant or remain in power is to try to convince us that guys like that we're seeing here is fake. Fake news. Pizzagate, it's fake. It's fake. And so that in order to for them to advance their cause, they always have to have a boogeyman. They always have to have somebody, some big animals out there to get them. They always do. And so that's what's part of being played out in front of us is they have been so destroyed. They gave $25 million to Megyn Kelly. Now, can I tell you the truth about Megyn Kelly? Megyn Kelly was popular because, you ready? I'm not making this up. The average age of the Fox News viewer is 64. Age of the Fox News viewer is 64. So you know what? They had a bunch of old men sitting there looking at this pretty vixen and being convinced that she was credible. And she was exposed as non-credible during the election process, and now she's running to the mainstream media. And see, the mainstream media is stupid enough to think that those old men are going to follow to see Megyn, and they're not going to. Political correctness is being crushed right in front of us. Did you see this the other day? Donald Trump, what he said about Chuck Schumer? Chuck Schumer texted out something, said, listen, over my dead body or something akin to that, over my dead body, appoint pro-life justices, something like that. And Trump tweets back, is a clown. Now, when is the last time we ever heard of a president of the United States political correctness that way and the rules of the Senate and all that? We're in for a ride. Anybody want to jump in here real quick? I'm going to shift gears and move a different direction. Anybody want to piggyback or say anything about that? It's the truth that's under attack. The fake news, my daughter, my smart daughter, Hillsdale College, brilliant girl. She says, Dad, that's not true. That Pizzagate, that's not true. So what? So, see, they are being somewhat effective in what it is that you're trying to do. I want to show you something. I've been threatened to this all week, and I'm going to do this one so I can get it off of my screen. I was watching The Twilight Zone over New Year's. I don't watch much TV, but for some reason I saw on the internet that the Sci-Fi Channel was having a Twilight Zone marathon. So I turned it on, watched it. I was laughing at it. I loved Rod Serling, and I loved all that stuff. And one of them that popped up was a thing called The Obsolete Man. And I got thinking, this is Burgess Meredith. You remember him from Rocky movies and all that. This is about 7 minutes, 8 minutes. Started at 1 minute mark, Jared. Man. Now, think about this. This show was produced in 1961. I was 9 years old when this, what you're about to see, was produced in 1961. Remember reading the book 1984, Ministry of Information, Two Legs Bad, Four Legs Good, or whatever it was. Remember all that stuff in Animal Farm in 1984 and all that? Rod Serling produced this. I'm not going to show you the whole thing, although you ought to all watch it, called The Obsolete Man, 1961. That's how many? 56 years ago. Watch this. Mark one, Jared.
Walk into this room at your own risk, because it leads to the future. Not a future that will be, but one that might be. This is not a new world. It is simply an extension of what began in the old one. It has patterned itself after every dictator who has ever planted the ripping imprint of a boot on the pages of history since the beginning of time. It has refinements, technological advances, and a more sophisticated approach to the destruction of human freedom. But like every one of the super states that preceded it, it has one iron rule. Logic is an enemy and truth is a menace. This is Mr. Romney Wordsworth. In his last 48 hours on Earth, he's a citizen of the state, but will soon have to be eliminated. Because he's built out of flesh, and because he has a mind. Mr. Romney Wordsworth, who will draw his last breaths in the Twilight Zone.
Wordsworth, Romney, field investigation finding obsolescence. Do you know why you're here, Mr. Wordsworth?
Yes, sir.
I'd ask you to speak up a little, if you will.
Yes, sir, I know why I'm here.
You've been under investigation, Mr. Wordsworth, for the mandatory period of 1 year and 11 months. You're found to be obsolete. The purpose of this hearing is to make a finding in the matter and make a sentence accordingly. Do you understand that?
I understand that.
Your occupation, Mr. Wordsworth?
A librarian,
sir. A what?
A librarian, sir.
Has this man had counsel?
Yes, sir, he has.
Are you sure he knows his rights?
He's been given orientation, sir.
Mr. Wordsworth, I'm told that you've had counsel. Stand back in the light, Mr. Wordsworth! I'm told you've had counsel and been given orientation, Mr. Wordsworth, but I'm still not sure in my own mind that you understand the purpose of this hearing. The field investigators in your sector have classified you as obsolete. This finding carries with it serious implications. Do you understand that, Mr. Wordsworth? Now, I ask you again your occupation.
I am a librarian, sir. That is my occupation. That is my profession. If you people choose to call that obsolete...
Request clarification of the term?
Yes, the term, Mr. Wordsworth, you people, you make reference to the state?
I make reference to the state.
And you persist in declaring your occupation as being that of a librarian, is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
A librarian. Having to do with books.
Yes, sir, books.
Since there are no more books, Mr. Wordsworth, there are no more libraries. And of course it follows that there is very little call for the services of a librarian. Case in point, a minister. A minister would tell us that his function is that of preaching the word of God. And of course it follows that since the state has proven that there is no God, that would make the function of a minister somewhat academic as well.
There is a God.
You are in error, Mr. Wordsworth. There is no God. The state has proven that there is no God.
You cannot erase God with an edict.
You are obsolete, Mr. Wordsworth.
A lie. No man is obsolete.
You have no function, Mr. Wordsworth. You're an anachronism, like a ghost from another time.
I am nothing more than a reminder to you that you cannot destroy truth by burning pages.
You're a bug, Mr. Wordsworth, a crawling insect, an ugly, misformed little creature who has no purpose here, no meaning.
I am a human being.
You're a librarian, Mr. Wordsworth.
You're a dealer in books and 2 cent fines and pamphlets and closed stacks and the musty insides of a language factory that spews out meaningless words on an assembly line. Words, Mr. Wordsworth, that have no substance and no dimension, like air, like the wind, like a vacuum that you make believe has an existence by scribbling index numbers on little cards.
I don't care. I tell you, I don't care. I'm a human being. I exist. And if I speak one thought aloud, that thought lives even after I'm shoveled into my grave.
Illusions, Mr. Wordsworth. Illusions that you inject into your veins with printer's ink. The narcotics that you call literature, the Bible, poetry, essays of all kind, all of it an opiate to make you think you have a strength when you have no strength at all. You have nothing but spindly limbs and a dream, and the state has no use for your kind.
You waste our time, Mr. Wordsworth, and you're not worth the waste. Instruct him.
Romney Wordsworth, step back to await the finding of this board.
Yes.
How do you find, ladies and gentlemen?
Obsolete.
I concur.
Romney Wordsworth, step forward. Board finds you obsolete.
Your rights are as follows, Mr. Wordsworth. You are to be liquidated within a period of 48 hours, but you have an option as to method and precise time. There are several prescribed methods, Mr. Wordsworth. Pills, gas, electrocution, and it can be done immediately or an hour from now or any specific time that you request.
I am a very rich man.
Louder.
I merely said that I was a very rich man. I have such a luxury of choices that I choose the following. To be given an assassin to whom I shall tell the method of my execution.
This is unheard of.
Mr. Wordsworth, we don't understand the nature of the request.
Simply that you are to assign me my assassin, but only he and I will know the way that I'm to die.
That will be acceptable, Mr. Wordsworth, provided your liquidation is accomplished within the 48-hour period.
With just one final request. I should like to die with an audience.
Jared, you can cut it off there. Is that unbelievable? Is that unbelievable that, you know, there's all types of hidden biblical expressions in there, right? You guys picked up on that. That Rod Serling back in 1961 saw this is happening to us right now in America by those who have forced themselves into positions of power who, through political correctness, will determine what can and cannot be spoken of. What, any reaction to that thing? Is that amazing? So what's going on, Coach? Coach, where are you going with this, Coach? Well, here's part of the battle that we are fighting, and we are fighting this battle not only in our families, but we're fighting this battle in our churches. What words you're allowed to use, what words you're not allowed to use. Jared, before we went on the air, Jared shared an experience that he had with somebody who I'm trying to think how I say this, Jared, who They were arguing over a biblical issue. One guy went to the Bible and read out of the NIV, the New International Version. And Jared said, well, yeah, that sounds good, but read it out of the King James. And the guy responded, no. So that we understand that even the words of the Bible have been politicized, made politically correct. To walk into your church and begin to call a sodomite would be is to call somebody a fornicator. Understand the power of language and the power of words. And what they were worried about there with Mr. Wordsworth was they were scared about what his words were worth. And they knew that if they could silence him and silence the words, the truth of the words, that they would, in fact, silence God. That's what I'm trying to help people understand. If they silence our mouths, they do, in fact, silence the word of God. Look like. Well, it doesn't mean that we become vulgar. It doesn't mean that we become a pain in the rear end. It doesn't mean that we go pick in a fight. But we have to begin to, in Christian circles, please understand what I'm telling you. In Christian circles, we have to begin to tear down this facade of political correctness that is occurring even inside our churches. Because what we are doing is we are making sin acceptable. Judgment begins first in the house of God, right? So the battle that's playing in our homes, in our communities, in our schools, is this perpetual battle over truth. And those of us who, as we read earlier today, shall know the truth and the truth shall make you free. No. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, then you shall know the truth. And the truth, if you know it, shall make you free. So this fake news is now just a last ditch, in my opinion, a last ditch effort to try to rescue political correctness. To try to, what's the word? Donald Trump, to make Donald Trump look like he's illegitimate, that the Bible's illegitimate, that conservatism is illegitimate. How many times have you heard over and over and over and over from the left that the majority of people voted for Hillary Clinton, as if majority doesn't? That's our battle. Bail me out here, Tim. What do you think? I got another video I want to show. Bail me out here.
Well, listen, you cracker. Yeah. I want you to know something. When I fill out my forms and I go for a job, I don't check the box Caucasian, because I check the box other, because I'm a Norwegian or I'm a Prussian.
That's right. What does it matter anyway, right? Other than it's information, they're trying to gather you to put you in a group. That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, words matter. It depends what you are.
And so we have to worry about that, right? Jesus, think about the words he used, brood of vipers, whitened sepulchres, sodomy. That word came from the Bible. Sodomite came from the Bible.
Yeah, well, I was at the store yesterday shopping, and there were two black guys sitting there talking, and they said something, and I said something back to them, and one guy looked at me and goes, so you think you're one smart cracker, don't you? You know? And I said that, yeah, you know, I'm one of the smartest crackers you ever met. And they both started laughing. And I started, I mean, we were kind of doing a play on words, you know. But sure, it was interesting that I got called a cracker. And
they get to use their words when we don't get to use ours. That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
Larry, we got a phone call there. I'm sorry, I didn't see that sooner. Who we got there?
We got Roger.
Hey, Roger. Welcome. Get up earlier.
Why don't we go pick a fight? You know, we on this huddle and those listening, many of us would agree that we are not being told the full gospel in our churches. We are not being shared many times the truth. We are changing the language in the church. Why are we not picking some fights in the business meetings and the deacon meetings and the, fried chicken get-togethers and this? Why aren't we picking a fight?
Good question. Why aren't we? Good question. Well, we know why. Because the church has been politicized as well. Political correctness, the salt of the earth, the salt of the world has made its way into the church. And the church has now been politicized. The church has become, Christians have become nicer than Jesus. That's the way that we're taught, that we're not to be rude. We're not to be say anything that brings division. When, in fact, the Bible is telling, not the rudeness, but the Bible tells us just the opposite. That we'll bring a sword, we'll bring division, that there is peace. We cry peace, peace when there is no peace. Well, the Bible has been stolen from us. Do you understand that? Still there, Raj? Raj wants to pick a fight.
I do. But it seems like maybe some of us need to be in some of those meetings, standing up and saying, we got some problems here, and picking a fight. Did you ever have a guy on your football team that said, coach, let me go take care of him? And you probably said no. But I watch a lot of hockey games where I think the coach says, go take care of that boy. And they go take care of him. The team gets pretty fired up and starts playing better.
Roger, I always said to him, yeah, you go take care of him, but you do it legally. You understand what I'm saying? You do it by the rules, because there's a chance during that football game that some guy's going to be standing around the pile, not paying a whole lot of attention. The whistle hadn't blown. It's all fair in love and war, brother. Yes, yeah, that's right. Woody Hayes said never made a tackle with a smile on his face, right? We're at war, and unfortunately, much of the war we're fighting is a war of words, and we've allowed them to change the words on us. That's what's happened to us. Sin's no longer sin. Fornication is not fornication. I'm sorry?
The fact that men will not stand up in their churches for righteousness, it's a no-win.
Well, why won't they stand up for righteousness? Because they've been told that that's not what Christian men do. Christian men love and forgive and blah, 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 blah. And JR just put down there, because we can't, the social morals, we're not allowed. I didn't understand what that said, JR. You left a word or two out of
that. The social morals won't allow us to do what you just said.
That's exactly right.
If you do that, you'll be chastised, because
that's right.
The group, the social contracts that we have out there won't allow us to do that. You'll be punished.
So do we continue to – see, that's I guess that's where I'm heading. That's what I'm trying to get at. Do we obey these social contracts, or do we try to overturn them? Because we are put in jail. We are in prison because of this political correctness and these social contracts that others have put upon us. Our pastors have shackled the truth. They've shackled the truth. And why is it that we look back over our history and we see pitchforks and torches and pitchfork brigades and godly men rising up again, and not anymore. Not anymore. It's all go along to get along. It's been done to us on purpose by the enemy. See, Kevin said the church teaches that it's not Christian to go to the battlefield with five smooth stones. Good point there, Kevin. Okay, so let me, a little bit of levity today. Let me throw some George Carlin up here. And you won't believe this. I found a George Carlin clip where he doesn't swear. This might be the only one that exists. But he doesn't swear. And I don't, George Carlin's been dead for a few years. I don't know how long. I don't even know when this was made. But he goes specifically after political correctness in a pretty educative way. Jared, pull that up. This is George Carlin without any cuss words.
In an earlier book, Brain Droppings, I wrote some things about politically correct language. But I left out a few areas. I neglected three important groups of people who have had this awkward, dishonest language inflicted on them by liberals.
Dishonest language.
I omitted those who are crippled, ugly, or stupid. And so, to address these earlier omissions, I'd like to make a brief return visit to that playground of guilty white liberals, political correctness. Political correctness is America's newest form of intolerance. And it's especially pernicious because it comes disguised as tolerance. It presents itself as fairness, yet attempts to restrict and control people's language with strict codes and rigid rules. I'm not sure that's the way to fight discrimination. I'm not sure silencing people or forcing them to alter their speech is the best method for solving problems.
Political correctness is That sign said political correctness is fascism pretending to be manners. Boy, is that ever true. Go ahead, Jared.
Method for solving problems that go much deeper than speech. Therefore, those among you who are more politically sensitive than the rest of us may wish to take a moment here to tighten up those sphincter muscles, because I'm going to inject a little realism into the dream world of politically correct speech, especially the words we use to describe one another. Perhaps you've noticed that when the politically correct liberal rulemakers decide to rename a group of humans they view as victims, they begin by imparting a sense of shame to the group's existing name. And so somewhere over the years, the word cripple has been discarded. No one mentions cripples anymore. That's because in yet another stunning attempt to stand reality on its head, cripples have been assigned a new designation, the physically challenged. The use of physically challenged is an obvious attempt to make people feel better. The idea being, as long as we can't cure these people, let's give their condition a more positive name and maybe it'll distract everyone. It's verbal sleight of hand. The same is true of the ungainly phrase, differently abled. I believe that if a person is going to insist on using tortured language such as differently abled, then he should be forced to use it to describe everyone. We're all differently abled. You can do things I can't do. I can do things you can't do. Barry Bonds can't play the cello. Yo-Yo Ma can't hit the curveball. They're differently abled. It should be explained to liberals, patiently, that crippled people don't require some heroic designation. It's a perfectly honorable condition. It appears in the Bible. Jesus healed the cripples. He didn't engage in rehabilitative strategies to improve the conditions of the physically disadvantaged. Can't these liberals hear how unattractive this language is, how poorly it sits on the ear? Personally, I prefer plain, descriptive language. For instance, and this is a suggestion that will bother some people, but I'm serious about it. Why don't we just call handicapped people defective? You know, we don't mind talking about birth defects. We don't flinch from that. We say Gunther has a birth defect. Isn't that a concession to the fact that people can be defective? Then what would be wrong with calling those people the physically defective? At what point in life does a person with a birth defect become a person who is differently abled? Why does it happen? I'm confused. Then there are those who don't quite measure up to society's accepted standards of physical attractiveness. The worst of that group are called ugly, or at least they used to be. The PC lingo cops have been working on this, too. And to demonstrate how far all this politically correct, evasive language has gone, some psychologists are actually now referring to ugly people as those with severe appearance deficits. Okay? Severe appearance deficits. So tell me, psychologist, how well does that sort of language qualify for being in denial? These allegedly well-intentioned people have strayed so far from reality that it will not be a surprise for me to someday hear a rape victim referred to as an unwilling sperm recipient. Back to ugly. Regarding people's appearance, the political language police already have in place one comically distorted term, lookism. They say that when you judge a person, or rather size them up, wouldn't want to judge someone, that would be judgmental. If you take their looks into account, you're guilty of lookism. You're a lookist. And those valiant people who fight lookism, many of them unattractive themselves, tell us that one problem is that in our society, those who get to be called beautiful and those who are called ugly are determined by standards arbitrarily set by us. Somehow there's some fault attached to the idea that we, the people, are the ones who set the standards of beauty. Well, we're the ones who have to look at one another. So why shouldn't we be the ones who set the standards? I'm confused. I would say the whole thing was stupid, but that's my next topic, and it would sound like a cheap transition. So, stupid. It's important to face one thing about stupidity. We can't get away from it. It's all around us. It doesn't take a team of professional investigators to discover that there are stupid people in the world. Their presence and its effects speaks for itself. But where do these stupid people come from? Well, they come from American schools. But while they're attending these schools, they're never identified as stupid. That comes later, when they grow up. When they're kids, you can't call them stupid, which may be contributing to the problem. Unfortunately, kids, stupid or otherwise, come under a sort of protective umbrella we've established that prevents them from being exposed to the real world until at 18 their parents spring them on the rest of us, full grown. There are stupid kids. And I do wish to be careful how I negotiate the minefield of the learning disabled and the developmentally disadvantaged. In other words, those with special needs. All of these being more examples of this tiresome and ridiculous language. I just want to talk about kids who are stupid, not the ones with dings. One of the terms now used to describe these stupid kids is minimally exceptional. Can you handle that? Minimally exceptional. Whatever happened to the old reliable explanation, the boy is slow? Was that so bad? Really? The boy is slow. Some of the other children are quick. They think quickly. Not this boy. He's slow. It seems humane enough to me, but no, he's minimally exceptional. How would you like to be told that about your child? He's minimally exceptional. Oh, thank God for that. We thought he was just kind of, I don't know, slow. But minimally exceptional, wow. Wait till I tell our friends. Political correctness cripples discourse, creates ugly language, and is generally stupid. I haven't quite finished this section. I'm sure I needn't remind you PC people that the opera isn't concluded until the full-figured woman offers her vocal rendering. I know, I really had to strain to get that in. I'm thoroughly ashamed. But before I leave this section, I wanted to make the point that on a practical level, this language renders completely useless at least one perfectly good expression. In the kingdom of the blind, the one-eyed man is king becomes... In the kingdom of the visually impaired, the partially sighted person is fully empowered. Sad, isn't it?
George Carlin. So, again, the attack around us, even in the church, even in the Bible, is the changing and the softening of words. Change the words, change the world. Now, what's our approach to that? Somebody bail me out here. We got about 6 minutes left. First of all, hang on. JR, what are you dealing with tomorrow on your show?
Well, exactly what you're talking about. Tuesday, you talked about being hit by a dart.
Yeah.
And it had to do with the family. I got struck by that same dart about 3 weeks earlier. And the family is the key to bailing us out of all this. There's a safe way to defend the truth and tip the scales of justice more to the Christian worldview. And that's what we have to do, but we've never had a vehicle. The vehicle you talked about Tuesday is the family. And we're gonna show you how to do that.
10 a.m. Where do they find you, JR?
www.mmunited.org. Or if they're on the show today listening to you, the 605-475-0017 works just as well.
All right, buddy. So here, guys, listen. So here's where it is. Hi, Reese. Say hi to everybody here. They haven't seen you in a while. We're in a new place here. There's my little granddaughter. They've changed the language on us. How do we, Rich, Sarge, somebody help me out here. How do we begin to advance this cause in Christian circles? I couldn't care less in the world. I couldn't care less. But unless we can drag Christians back to truth, We're not going to have this stuff figured out. Anybody have any suggestions? Hey,
Coach, I heard a great quote by this really wise man, and I used it. I used it four times yesterday by this great wise man. He said, "If you have a crooked arrow, and you shoot it, you're never going to hit your target." This guy was a smart guy. So I used this thing four times yesterday about pulling an arrow out of your quiver, and if it's bent, it ain't going to hit the target.
Amen.
If you are bent a little bit, you're never going to hit the target. I told this guy yesterday, I was talking to him about this, you know, and he said, "Wow, that's a good idea. If you are bent in life, you're never going to hit your target." And I used that illustration four times yesterday.
And if your words are bent, they're not going to hit the target, right, Rich?
Exactly.
So how do we do this? How do we advance this? Because listen, guys, this is an earthquake in Christian circles. It's an earthquake. But if we don't get it right, if we don't begin to stand up and speak the truth and stop teaching our children to lie, which is what we do with political correctness. How many times have you ever like had this little thing with her and she says something, say, oh, Reese, don't say that, when she's heard me say it 100 times, right? Serious stuff. Again, serious stuff. Judgment begins first. Thanks for coming, Reese. First begins in the house of God. Somebody bail me out.
Second John 1. Can we have a little scripture in?
Oh, please do, man. Hey, Rich, I didn't have my Bible with me today.
Okay. Second John 1, 8 through 11.
Pull that up there and go ahead and read it to us, Rich. Second John 1.
8 through 11. We're talking about judgment comes first to the house of God. As for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord. You know, what does righteous judgment look like in our families, in our homes? You know, this is tough teaching. Look to yourselves that we lose not those things which we have wrought, but that we receive a full reward. Whosoever transgresseth and abideth not in the doctrine of Christ hath not God. He that abideth in the doctrine of Christ, he has both the Father and the Son. If there come any, same as whosoever, if there come any into you and bring not this doctrine, receive him not into your house, neither bid him Godspeed. For he that biddeth him Godspeed is partaker of his evil deeds. We have got to put up boundaries in our families. It has to start there before it can move to the church, before it can move to the school, before it can move to the government.
Draw some lines, brother. Draw some lines.
It's tough, but we want to know where we're going to start.
1 John 2, 8 through 11. Wow. Larry, are you trying to jump in here?
Coach,
Jared, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I had a philosophical conversation with a guy yesterday, and we ended the conversation, and he said, You know, Jared, you're a good man. And I looked at him and I said, I started to say, you know, you're a good guy too. And then I said, you know, I can't say you're a good man because you're not forgiven your sins because you don't believe in Jesus Christ.
Amen.
And that's what I told him. And he's like, huh, it's worth thinking about, you know. But that's kind of this
idea. Was he offended by
idea.
It? Was he offended by it?
No, it went with the nature of the conversation, you know. It was a philosophical discussion. Sure. So, but that's kind of this, right? I mean,
that's right. That's right.
If I were to say, "You're a good man, Godspeed," I am now at fault for what he's doing in a way, you know.
Go ahead, Larry.
I would like to piggyback on what Rich and Jared just said. Only this. A little bit in a different direction. You know, a lot of us, and myself, have been guilty of just God blessing everybody. Guess what? God gave us the authority. Jesus passed his authority on to us. And that authority includes being able to pronounce God's true blessings on the people. And then God warned us in his word, don't give that which is holy to the ungodly. Don't you cast my pearls before swine. Don't throw that word out there where it's going to get snatched away. So when we go around just God blessing everybody, we are guilty of gross disobedience. Now, I have tried to train myself to avoid this train wreck by this simple tactic. If I'm speaking to somebody or something and it's a situation would normally require a God bless you, I simply say, be blessed. And in my spirit and in my mind and in my heart, what I'm meaning is whichever master you're serving, let his blessings come upon you.
I'm with you, Larry. That's good. And Rich, what you just read there today is just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. The idea, again, of broad and narrow, many and few, the in club and the out club, that theme is all throughout the scriptures. And why are we so unwilling to embrace that theme? I don't know, man. I don't know.
Hey, Dave, political correctness has brought in family incorrectness.
And moral incorrectness, too. Those two have come, they've come hand in hand. They have for sure. So, folks, this stuff's all around us. I'm on a war path. I'm on a war path against stuff that's not true. And my focus is and will continue to be things in the church family that's not true, that we're believing. We need a moral, spiritual, biblical reformation in our churches. We need the truth to be spoken once again from the pulpits of our churches. That's the only way that it's going to happen. And as our theme has been all this week, family great again, then the church will be great again. We're trying to do it backwards. We're trying to make the church great without making the family great. Isn't going to work. Turn into JR tomorrow. Have a great weekend. Stay warm. We'll see you on Monday.